Well, hey guys.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. Why is your camera turned off?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, I'm up on the back of my new horse and I can't quite reach the keyboard.
I'm sorry. Your what?
My horse, Butterfinger. I'm trying to get him used to the saddle, you know? Say hi, Butterfinger.
Okay, wait. You're telling me that you have a full-grown horse
inside your one-bedroom apartment.
And you learned to ride this horse.
And you're sitting astride it while we try to record a podcast.
Yes.
Cool.
Why?
Well, you know, there was a bunch of news at the state capitol this week. Vetoes from the governor, a new Foxconn deal, task force recommendations for police reforms. But none of it really fits together under a coherent theme. So I got Butterfinger here to help us with another patented WPR Politics podcast, Roundup. Yeah.
Nice. I like it. Roundup. Yeah.
Sean?
Yeah. Roundup. Yeah.
Sean.
Roundup. Yeah.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week on the podcast, a good old Wisconsin politics news.
Roundup. Yeah.
Horses in the bag. Horse stock is attached. Head is matted black. Got the bushes black to match. Riding on a horse. Ha. You can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley. You ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing.
Now, honestly, I don't think that song needs much introduction at all. But if you happen to have never heard it somehow, that is Old Town Road from hip-hop artist Lil Nas X from his 2019 EP, 7. And I think it works on multiple levels, because not only is it horse-themed, but also this week, the big song that everybody on Wisconsin political Twitter was talking about was WAP by Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B because of a back and forth between Cardi B and Wisconsin Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman about that song. But I feel like it's more on brand for this podcast to instead talk about the mega radio hit from 2 summers ago. We're just that relevant.
We're just like slightly behind the curve on most things. So it's on brand for us.
And Butterfinger here really likes it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
It's kind of his jam.
Maybe you'll be able to turn on that camera one of these days. I'd sure like to see your horse.
Yeah, I'd like to meet him.
You know, I just can't quite reach. I'm sorry, guys. You'll have to trust me.
It's kind of crazy that you led your horse up the stairs to your apartment, too, because, you know, it could be a challenge getting down the stairs, I've read, but...
Yeah, I didn't really think that one through. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Good luck.
You can lower him on, like, a pulley system or something out the window.
It sounds like something we could do very easily.
All right, well, Roundup. Guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I may have injured myself on some of those roundups there. I'm just not used to it. So if my voice goes out about midway through, you know why.
Yeah. For folks who, you know, pulling back the curtain here a little bit, we record, you know, multiple takes of intros often. And so this week we got Sean to do a lot of roundup he has.
Lost my headphones on one of those takes. Dude, I'm just giving it my all here. I'm not a natural, cowboy, I guess, but the effort's there.
Not a lot of cowboys had to wear headphones. So
that's true.
Maybe that's true. Maybe they would have lost their headphones.
Maybe
too.
I am a natural cowboy, actually. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's what we'll go with.
Come to think of it, anyway. So we have some various stories to lasso up, to round up this week that don't fall cleanly under a theme, but they're all worth talking about. Which one do we want to get to first?
I think we should start with Foxconn first, because this was like one of the biggest issues we covered at the end of the Walker administration and was a huge issue on the governor's campaign in 2018, which I know feels like a million years ago now, but given all of our history with Foxconn, the changes this week are pretty monumental.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Foxconn for a minute. So this is kind of exciting. It's like revisiting an old friend.
And by monumental, I think the thing to take away here is that the New Deal is the opposite of monumental.
True.
It's very, very small compared to the original deal that the state struck with Foxconn.
Yeah, in quite a few ways. I mean, in terms of what the company is saying it's going to do, you know, it's no longer being billed as like bringing TV production to North America, like not by a long shot. I mean, if you just look at kind of a summary of the original Foxconn deal compared to what the latest deal calls for, the original was calling for this generation 10.5 LCD facility in Mount Pleasant. And we all had to read about what that meant. Essentially, really, really big TV screens. That went by the wayside. It's now calling for investment in activities related to a technology and manufacturing ecosystem. So very fluid, kind of like whatever Foxconn decides to build here, it will build here.
Could be coffee kiosks, could be electric car parts.
These are things that have been suggested.
We don't know.
The kiosks have definitely been cast aside, right? But the electric car parts seems to be up in the air still.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not up on what's on the docket at this point.
There have been a lot of ideas that have been thrown out. And then if you just look also at the amount of money in the contract that was signed when Governor Walker was governor, it was calling for credits up to $2.85 billion. And the amended contract is $80 million. So a lot smaller.
Yeah. And I mean, the number of jobs, too. So that initial, like, $3 billion-ish contract was for 13,000 jobs. The new number of jobs is 1,400. So pretty big reduction there. And then it also reduces the time frame, too. So the first contract was for 15 years. The new one's for 6 years.
And the capital investment also, because included in this overall contract was this idea that there would be credits of up to $1.35 billion for capital investment, you know, building. And the amended contract is for $40 million in credits. And the company is anticipating a $10 billion investment. It's now anticipating a $672 million investment. So, I mean, $672 million, it's not small, but this is not the, how is it presented, eighth wonder of the world? Which number wonder was it?
It was eighth wonder of the world.
The eighth wonder of the world.
To former President Donald Trump at the time, who was at the groundbreaking for the facility.
I mean, there was no hyperbole spared when it came to Foxconn. And we spent a lot of time talking about it. And this was going to be like Governor Walker's kind of crowning achievement is how it was portrayed, you know. And Foxconn is there and the state's still doing business with Foxconn. Just much different. And it's like an admission from all sides that this is not what we said it was going to be back in 2017.
Yeah. So in general, we kind of knew that the Evers administration was looking into trying to renegotiate things with Foxconn. But as far as I know, this announcement was kind of a surprise, right?
Yeah, I think if we had talked about it last week about Foxconn and said, hey, where are things at there? We would have said, well, I know they have said they were looking at renegotiating, but we hadn't heard anything from anybody about that for quite a while. So the actual announcement was a little bit of a surprise when it came out. Yes. If you look at the big picture though, I mean, Evers did talk about doing this as part of his gubernatorial campaign. Actually, knowing we were going to talk about this, I looked up an old story we did about the first Democratic gubernatorial debate Remember, there were a lot of candidates back then. There were.
I do recall that. Yeah,
there were 8 candidates in this particular debate, and it began with a show of hands question asking all of them where they stood on Foxconn, and most said they would kill it. They'd just kill the Foxconn deal, except for Evers, who said, quote, "I can't sit up here and tell the people of Wisconsin this isn't going to happen. We're already there, and we're going to have to make sure, since we're already there, the people of Wisconsin are treated fairly." So his position had always been, we're going to renegotiate this deal. And so this was the fulfillment of a big campaign pledge for him on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to point out that most of the comments after the renegotiation was announced were pretty positive. I mean, even across the aisle, you had Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz, who's a member of the WEDC board. He appointed himself. He issued a statement in favor of everything. Even Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who's also on the board.
Appointed by himself. Yep.
Yeah. He was pretty complimentary. And I think his comments are really interesting because he had initially, even as recently as last weekend, I think, on an interview with WISN-TV in Milwaukee, had been pretty critical of renegotiations. He said, quote, "Foxconn is making concessions because they have their backs up against the wall, even though they're meeting goals that were set by the last administration, by the legislation that we enacted. The governor doesn't seem to want to keep the state's deal." So I think that's really interesting that Voss kind of changed his position on it. And I think also to call out a part of his statement there, it's my understanding that Foxconn hadn't been meeting a lot of goals set in the initial contract. I mean, they haven't successfully gotten any of the tax breaks
for the jobs.
They would.
Yeah.
Right. For jobs. So interesting to kind of look at their response to the renegotiation for sure.
Yeah. I think given how much stock Evers had put into it as an issue, I would have expected really, you know, a kind of there would be this baked in opposition from Voss to the final deal. But his statement afterward did praise it. You know, "I'm happy that Wisconsin and Foxconn were able to come up to an updated agreement, and glad the company continues to grow in Mount Pleasant." And Foxconn itself put out a statement saying, "We're grateful to Governor Evers, Missy Hughes," that's the WEDC CEO, "her team and our team at Foxconn for finding a solution that worked for the state, our local partners, Wisconsin taxpayers, and our shareholders." So you didn't hear anybody really, there was no opponent to this deal when it was announced among kind of the major stakeholders. I mean, you have to remember, Foxconn is still, they're not going to qualify for nearly $3 billion here, but they're still getting government money for setting up a facility where they could profit handsomely if they figure out what product they're going to build. They've also gotten quite a bit of assistance from local governments, which has not changed. You know, this deal affects the state's commitment to Foxconn going forward, but it does not say anything about what local governments have already spent to lure the company there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty substantial amount of money. I think it's about $1 billion that local governments have spent on things like infrastructure. So it's not an insubstantial investment there for them.
Right. I mean, there was all this infrastructure put in, new roads and buying people out of their homes near the Foxconn property in Mount Pleasant. And there's still this big lot there with some buildings going up on it, but we don't know what they're going to make, and it's not a giant TV factory.
We know they have an Epcot-style globe in the middle.
This is true.
We know for sure.
An Epcot-style globe that's also a computing center, I think, is what it is. I don't know if that's like a computer lab or just like a server farm or what the deal is there, but it's a giant glass globe.
Yeah. You guys ever go in the globe at actual Epcot?
I have never been to Epcot.
Oh, man. I know.
It's cool.
It's not a popular thing to say, but it's cool.
John Epcot's and I are where, on the same page. Yeah. I mean, I was 8, so.
Well, we went there as parents, and I like Epcot because they serve beer there, guys. That's what it is. You take your kid there, they fall asleep in the stroller, go to Germany. All right, I've said too much. Move on.
Solid parenting advice, though. What is this?
Yeah.
So it seems like we've pretty much moved on from Foxconn here at this point, and we can move on to the next part of our roundup. But so you don't hurt yourself, Sean, do you want me to just insert one of the pre-recorded hiyas there? Save your vocal cords a little bit?
That's great. Want. That's good. I think it's actually a good idea. Roundup! Hiyah!
What's next on our agenda here?
Do we want to talk about some of the governor's vetoes from this week? Most notably, the 11 vetoes of the federal COVID-19 aid money.
Oh, you mean the 11 bills that we spent an hour talking about last week on the podcast, which have now all been totally nullified by the governor? Yeah, we can talk about those.
Yeah, a little tip there for you listeners. If you're catching up on old episodes, maybe you can skip that one. I don't know. I mean,
except don't, because the sound effects were immaculate.
They were good. We had a good time with that episode.
Spent anyway. A lot of time on that episode. So listen, even if you know even what if you the know final they're... result is.
You know, right. Sometimes it's about the journey, not the destination.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, and it could be actually, I'll make a plug that it could be stuff that's really good to know for budget negotiations, just in terms of things they're going to talk about during the budget and what that dialogue might be like.
Yeah, I think all this federal funding and how to spend it and the posturing over how to spend it is going to be pretty relevant during budget negotiations and potentially in next year's campaigns. Always dangerous to try to predict campaigns so far ahead, but it just feels like it could come up, you know?
Yeah. So without going through each bill individually, like we did last week, do you have some highlights here, at least, of the situation and what he vetoed and why he said he vetoed these bills?
I have one that I'd like to share. And this, all right. This is... Okay, he had to write a letter for all his vetoes, you know, to the honorable members of the assembly. And there's 11 bills. And he vetoed them all. So he did a little copy and pasting here if you study it closely. And we have quite a trained eye for this. But I noticed one paragraph appeared in every letter. And that is the paragraph where he talks about how it is not really the legislature's job to handle this funding, that this federal funding is his call on how to deal with it. And he put this in every one. He said, "I also object to the bill because it limits the ability to use federal recovery funds with the flexibility necessary to confront the variety of challenges posed by recovery from the COVID-19 global pandemic and respond to Wisconsin's changing needs over the course of the pandemic and our recovery. In Wisconsin, the role of the governor to oversee the use of federal funds under Section 16.54 of Wisconsin statutes is clearly established and has been in place for decades, a fact that was confirmed by legislative leadership in a letter they sent to me in April 2020. That was kind of the dig about the letter is kind of comical to read 11 times because, like, it's just like, yeah, we got it.
In case you missed it. Yeah.
In case you didn't know, legislative leader sent a letter a year ago and said, "I have the authority to use these funds." So he made a point of putting that into every veto message. I believe it was in all 11. What other themes did you see, Laurel?
Well, I think this was also part of the kind of form letter. He says at the end, I quote, "I will continue to utilize the authority provided to the governor to oversee use of federal funds in a manner that is transparent and consistent with both Wisconsin's needs and federal law." So that kind of plays into some of the Republican pushback, particularly the transparent part. You know, they've been pointing out for state budget negotiations, if they don't know how this money is going to be spent, then they can't make budgeting decisions. So that's kind of a nod to that. For the most part, yeah, I mean, these were really similar letters. I think it was interesting. There were a couple that had some different language that I noted. the veto message about the property tax bill, the one that would have sent people checks, people who pay property taxes. Yeah,
John, you'll find this one interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I'm single and don't own my own home, and the tax break wouldn't have affected me, and I'm bitter about that.
Okay, well, I know we
Is
just
that
said
what you're alluding to.
I know we just said not to listen to last week's episode, but John alluded to his status as a renter and how like this would not cover him because this was payments to property taxpayers. So the governor in his veto message said it makes no payments to renters. So
mm-hmm. I didn't actually read that budget or that veto message. So thank you, Governor Evers, for, for making me feel seen.
Yeah. repping the renters for sure. So he mentioned that he said it was poorly targeted. That was the phrase he used. But he also pointed out something we talked extensively about on the podcast last week, which is that that proposal might not be allowed under the federal guidelines, under the federal bill that allocates this money to states. So he said this probably isn't allowed. It's poorly targeted. He also mentioned the probably not allowed argument in his veto messages for a bill that would have paid down state debts and a bill that would have invested in some upgrades to the emergency communication system in the state and also funded expansion of a mental health treatment center in Eau Claire. So that was something he touched on for some of the bills that the Legislative Fiscal Bureau called out as maybe not possible.
Other things about these vetoes?
I think a couple other things that caught my eye, these weren't really trends, but I was curious to see how he would handle maybe some of the more sticky political questions in these. Okay, so that maybe they were not sticky in the eyes of the governor, right? He sees these 11 bills that like usurp his authority, many of which may not be allowed, and he just basically decided as quickly as he legally could, I'm not having it. We're vetoing all these. So maybe not a difficult decision in his mind. But we do know there is a sort of battle in the legislature over who loves broadband more. And so there
this
was
is true.
There was this, one of these bills would have spent $500 million on broadband. And it would have been spread out over 3 years. The governor says in vetoing that, I have already announced my intent to direct a significant amount of the new federal funds to provide for broadband expansion. And of course, his budget also includes funding for broadband expansion. But this bill, we don't know how that's going to go in the budget. This bill, no matter what happens, Republicans probably feel like it gives them some kind of cover. You know, now they can say, look, we wanted all the money for broadband, but the governor vetoed it. You know, depending on, broadband may yet get quite a bit of money in budget negotiations, but this gives them political cover anyway. There's also this other bill that basically just gave Evers everything that he wanted on a variety of water proposals, including $40 million for replacing lead laterals. And he vetoed that. His line at the end of that one was, I'm pleased to see that the legislature has adopted many of the environmental protection and pollution remediation provisions that were included in my 2021-23 budget. Even if I disagree with the source of the funding, I look forward to working with the legislature to include many of these items in the upcoming budget. I just am not sure. I don't know how lawmakers are going to view this when it's not in this form. You know, I don't know how they're going to deal with it in the budget. And they could say, well, we would have passed it with federal funds, but we're not going to pass it with state funds. To be continued on that.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he called out the broadband and the environmental, the water proposals in his veto messages and pointed to his state budget proposals for those things, but not a lot of other. I mean, he had 11 bills here with 11 different subjects, and he didn't go for every single one and say, well, this was my proposal for this. This is sort of my alternate. He just did that for a couple different specific things that have been very, like broadband, very political and kind of top of mind for people this year.
There's also a chance, because there's so much federal money coming to Wisconsin, and there's money for local governments like Milwaukee County could get money that could go specifically toward lead laterals. Possibly there could be additional federal money coming through this infrastructure bill, you know, and maybe this problem gets solved outside of the budget anyway. There's just a lot of federal money coming in. So if everybody is on the record now as saying they want to fix this, one would hope that it gets fixed somehow.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me that it's kind of the epitome of divided government in Wisconsin right now, where even when everybody agrees on something, they disagree.
It might not happen just because of the way that it shakes out. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a lot on those vetoes on top of the hour we spent on that stuff last week.
Stay tuned for our retrospective episode next week.
Right? The results of the vetoes.
Right.
Well, pre-recorded, Sean. Can I get another roundup here?
Sure. Roundup! Yeah! Man, I'm bringing the energy today. Oof.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Killing it. So what's our next unrelated piece of Wisconsin political news?
So this next one is a set of 18 recommendations from the Racial Disparity and Police Practices Task Force that was formed last year in Wisconsin. They've been working
on... Can we go through all 18?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be an extended version of the podcast. If you thought 11 bills last week was a lot, we got 18 recommendations now. So settle in.
All right. I'm ready. What are these recommendations?
So what I think is interesting about these recommendations, so this task force is just two lawmakers, Representative Jim Steinecke, who's the Assembly Majority Leader, Representative Sheila Stubbs, who's a Democrat from Madison, a member of the Legislative Black Caucus, and quite a few, I think it's 17 community representatives from law enforcement groups and community groups. And they basically talked about law enforcement standards and policies and changes in the wake of the Jacob Blake shooting and kind of that national conversation about police violence against minority communities. And I think there are two kind of categories of recommendations that came out of this report. And one are things that we've heard about before, we've talked about before, that Governor Evers actually has proposed before. He called a special session of the legislature on policing last summer in August and released a package of 9 bills. And there's some overlap there. And then there's another kind of group of proposals that are new, that we hadn't seen before, that are coming out of the task force. And those are what, when I interviewed Representative Steinecke, what he pointed to and said, this is why we took more time. This is why we didn't meet last August, because we came up with all of these new things and we wouldn't have these if we hadn't taken this time.
What are some of the standout or big ticket items among these 18 recommendations, the notable ones?
I think the two really big ones are proposals that we've heard a lot about as this national conversation about police practices has evolved over, you know, 12 months or so. And those are the use of chokeholds and no-knock warrants. And this set of recommendations addresses both of those things. In his proposal last year, Governor Evers called for a total ban on chokeholds in Wisconsin. This task force recommends banning the chokeholds except in certain situations. So they would be allowed for use in life or death situations and situations where an officer is preserving his or her personal safety, so self-defense. Basically, I thought this was really interesting. I asked Representative Steinecke about this. He said that the pushback on banning chokeholds entirely is that it's a tool that law enforcement can use in, you know, very specific situations, and it's an alternative for them so they don't have to draw a weapon. And he said this actually allowing these to be used in certain circumstances might actually prevent someone from being more seriously injured because a weapon isn't going to be involved. So that's kind of the task force line on that change. But I think that'll be something certainly that's discussed, that the task force doesn't go as far as the governor wanted to and that a lot of activists want to in Wisconsin and around the country. The other thing, the no-knock warrants, is also really interesting. So the governor called for a ban on those. And the task force essentially said, we don't have enough information about how often no-knock warrants are used in Wisconsin. And so we're not comfortable recommending a ban when we don't know if people are using them. And also, some task force members said, you know, there are certain situations like recovering a kidnapping victim, for example, where a no-knock warrant can be especially helpful. So just looking into the scenarios where they're used, why they're used, and having the State Department of Justice do that gathering and analysis is one of the recommendations. So if I had to pick kind of the two highlights, I would say those are the two highlights out of the 18.
So you mentioned Jim Steinecke, the Republican on this task force, a couple of times, and I kind of want to use him as a segue to get into some of the political background or context about this task force beyond just the recommendations that came out, because we know through some reporting that he has said some things in private about what he thinks about the task force and the whole process.
Yeah, I mean, this was first reported by Up North News. They had an open records request and got an email from Steinecke to Speaker Voss where he talked about this issue being like a political loser, you know? And that, I mean, they took a lot of heat for that when that story came out. And I guess one...
Like he basically said, like, this is a political loser, but I'm willing to take on being on this task force, you know, take one for the team, essentially.
Yeah, and kind of...
I'm remembering the story correctly.
I'm not using the exact wording here, but it was sort of... He sort of knew where the boundaries are of where they could go with this, right? And so it sort of like potentially undercut the credibility of the task force, and you wondered, how is Sheila Stubbs going to react to this, the Democrat on the committee? And she stuck with Steinecke. They were very much on the same page in releasing this report. So a bipartisan, group of recommendations here on this issue between this issue has not been a bipartisan issue over the past year, mm-hmm. is noteworthy in and of itself. But I think where it goes from here, I'm not sure. You know, it's not exactly what the governor wanted. So there's that element of it. He may think, other Democrats may think it doesn't go far enough. Also, there may be Republicans who don't want any part of this. There have been a lot of speakers, bipartisan task forces that have produced a package of bills in the assembly that the Senate just says no thanks to. This could be one of those. We're getting way ahead there, though. These aren't even bills yet. They haven't had hearings yet. They got to go through the process. But I think there's a lot of open questions when it comes to how these are going to be received in the political world.
All right. Well, we did it, guys. We successfully rounded up three pretty much unrelated topics. Good job to you, but the real winner here is Butterfinger. He just he made the whole thing work. Good job, boy.
Butterfinger loves that news.
Yes, he does.
He is a news horse. The old saying, quite a news horse.
Yep. Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
Laurel White, who actually knows how to ride horses, by the way, is WPR's Capital Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd and Butterfinger trainer.
Yeah. And Butterfinger is our news horse. Riding in boots. Cowboy hat from Gucci. Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody. Well, howdy there, partner. If you'd like to get new episodes of this here WPR Politics podcast delivered to you almost every single week, well, all you have to do is log into one of the applications from providers like Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many others. And while you're there, well, we would certainly appreciate it if you would leave a review or a rating of the program to help other folks find it. And of course, you can kick back and listen to all of our past episodes anytime you'd like at wpr.org/politicspodcast.
You got your show horses and your work horses and your news horses, they always say.